Toad and Daffodil, but was originally created by Snarf Dude and Moondog for Scottsdale and Productions. Drop by the website anytime online at www.cheezepleeze.com. I'm Uncle Skeeter, inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain. Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Likely the most troubling symptom of depression is suicidal ideation. It's terrifying to be told by your mind that life isn't worth living, that everything would be so much better if you weren't here. Nick Wood of UK melodic punk bands Tired of Fighting and Blame Yourself has experienced suicidal ideation for many years. When Nick was in his 20s, the thoughts became so overwhelming that he attempted to end his life. After dealing with depression for so long and the suicidal ideation that comes creeping up, Nick has learned that these thoughts and feelings always pass. No matter how hard it gets, they always pass. For Nick, playing music and other creative pursuits have made all the difference. Being around the music community and avoiding isolation have been a big part of coping with his suicidal thoughts.
I'm Nick Wood. I'm in the bands Tired of Fighting and Blame Yourself. Punk music, rock music has been a savior for me for my entire life. I've always felt a bit ostracized, I didn't feel like I really fit. As a teenager, I was kind of sad and confused. And as soon as I heard sort of punk music and punk adjacent music, things made so much more sense than they had before. It made me feel alive. It made me feel, ultimately. I remember listening to Finch, What It Is to Burn, and Grey Matter, and hearing that scream for the first time, and it was just a eureka moment. I think it's going to be okay. And then I started to write sort of punk adjacent music, and that's been such a help for me to help get over, you know, suicidal ideation, depression, things like that.
Yeah, suicidal ideation is so scary, and in my mind, it's kind of like the lowest rung on a ladder of depression. You know, you start to feel crappy about yourself, and then all of a sudden these negative thoughts are creeping in, and then all of a sudden you're starting to feel really fatigued and lethargic, and then it goes right down the line until suicidal thoughts, and sometimes even worse for some people. What did that look like for you when you were growing up? You mentioned like being a teen and starting to notice that a lot more than maybe you had in the past.
It's really scary when you're sort of 14, 15, like you're figuring out everything and then realize that you have this thing is, yeah, it's a scary time. It's a difficult thing to deal with.
So when you were having those thoughts and feelings when you were young, did you know what it was? Was it coming at you and like, you know, just hitting you without really understanding it? Or were you starting to learn more about maybe depression and what you're seeing around you or in the world?
Obviously, everyone's experience is a different sort of thing, but it would hit me in sort of like flash it. Like I would get sort of visuals of it, and it was very disturbing. So I've never been diagnosed with depression per se, sort of thing, but I've had suicidal thoughts. Yeah, they're a difficult thing to manage. I mean, I manage them much better now. Now you can realize that they're just a thought. They can just go in and out of your head. You can realize that you don't have to let those thoughts control you, but you don't really know what to do with that when you're a young person.
Yeah, and caught up in it too. Like even for me, when I was diagnosed with bipolar, it was in my mid-40s, and I was having these huge depressive episodes where, exactly like you said, I was in it. You know, I didn't know if what was real and what wasn't real, and I didn't know that these thoughts were skewed and distorted thoughts. You know, it was just coming at me.
When you're in it, it's you're not in a sound mind. I remember being in a depressive episode and then being out of it months later and realizing, genuinely thinking that your family doesn't care about you and they wouldn't mind if, or their lives would be better if you were dead. That is an irrational thought, but like it's genuinely what you think. And then once you're out of it, you think, whoa, that's, I wasn't very well.
Were you coming out of it in a gradual way, or was all of a sudden you woke up one morning and saying, oh my goodness, what have I been doing here? Like, was there a sort of an ebb and a flow? Because for me, it's very much like it sort of ramps up and then it comes back down, and I kind of come out of it slowly. It wasn't like I had a realization.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever been a click of the fingers and just like everything's amazing. It's a gradual thing. Because even if you're like when you come out with depressive episodes, everything isn't amazing. Everything isn't amazing. Like things are okay and things are really good sometimes. But like it's very rare when everything is incredible all of the time. So I tried to kill myself when I was 24. I overdosed. And I was in the doctor's office and we'd done the bloods and stuff. And he said, if you don't take this treatment, then you're going to die in 2 days. And he said, do you want to take the treatment? It was that moment where it should have been, oh, I've made a terrible mistake. I've made an awful thing. Life is worth living. And this was just no reaction. And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, why do you want to kill yourself? And I said, because I don't think life's ever going to get better. I don't think I'm ever going to feel better. And he said, that's not true. And my immediate thought was, you're lying. You're lying to me. And that's messed up. That is an ill thought process. There are literally human beings out there who think that these things don't exist. And to them, I would say, exhibit A,
Yeah.
the thing that I went through.
When you think back to that situation with the doctor, do you feel like he did the right thing?
Well, he saved my life.
Yeah.
Well, my family and him did. They saved my life. He offered me the treatment, and I said, "Will it definitely work?" And he said, "It might not work." So I thought, "Well, okay." I thought, "Well, I might as well take it because if I'd taken so many pills, I thought, well, it might not work anyway. So at least I can take it and say that I've done the thing for my family, and then it won't work, and I can just die anyway." Just like, wow, that's dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when I've been in depressive episodes in the past, I've kind of thought you should have said no to the treatment, but then you come out of it and you think, there are so many wonderful, incredible things that I would have missed if, you know, I hadn't chosen life.
I think a lot of people presume that a situation like that, where you decided that you were going to go on and live, you come out of that and you're like, yes, everything's great now. I think that a lot of people presume or misinterpret that and think that people who live with mental health conditions are now better because they've made a decision or because they're not having as bad of episodes anymore and they're cured or they're fixed.
You learn to manage it better as you get older. That's probably a sign of it. And obviously, I think we've come to understand mental health conditions so much better in the last 20 years or so. You know, some days are just much better than others, aren't they? And it can make no sense sometimes as well. Sometimes things can be going great and you just feel really bad. Sometimes things can not be going well, but somehow you find this strength and to be like, I'm going to be okay. It's just, yeah, it's a difficult thing to predict.
I think living through any kind of mental health condition and depressive episodes that are really dark gives people so much strength as well that maybe they're able to dig in more. You know, you've been through, like you said, a suicide attempt. Well, and you survived that, then you can survive the next episode. Or, you know, even like for me, something bad happens in my life and I dig in and I can handle that because I've had times where I was like, life isn't worth living.
I've been to therapy a few times and to be honest, it's not gone that well. But one of my coping mechanisms, sometimes you've just got to imagine that the episode is like a river and you've got to find a log, whatever that log is, be it your family, your friends, music, whether that be performing or just something. And you've got to dig your fingers into that and just hold on until the stream passes.
When did music first become that for you? Was it when you were quite young?
I remember really loving singing when I was young, and I was like, wow, I really like this. And I remember being louder than a lot of people. Like, but when I was in the choir, like, people would turn around and be like, why are you doing that? But like, so I think it's been, music's been the answer to whatever the question is for a long time for me.
Were you able to play music when you were in really dark times?
Sometimes it saved me. I remember, again, as a teenager, like on a really bad, depressive day, I picked up a guitar instead of self-harming, for example, and that helped. Although sometimes it's been the case where I've been so sad. I mean, you've probably experienced this, where you're in a depressive episode where you just don't do anything. And then you eventually end up getting out of it and you go, whoa, I need to write down what happened there because that was really crazy. So it depends, to be honest. And sometimes I'll write when I'm in a depressed episode and I look back at it and just like, oh, that's not very, that's just ramblings. That's just scribbles. That's just you trying to survive today. Like, that's not coherent necessarily. Yeah. Whereas I think the better songs I've written is me coming out of it and being sort of on a good mental equilibrium and having, you know, logic and then being able to write cohesively after the event.
Yeah, and they say, you know, if you're not enjoying the things that you normally enjoy, that's a huge red flag for depression. So, you know, the people around you notice that you haven't been playing music or having the guitar with you, it could be a sign of going down that ladder of depression.
Yeah, but also if you've got an injury or something, or you can't sing for whatever reason, that can definitely trigger something. It's so awful when you can't do the thing that you feel like you're supposed to be doing.
I know I have a fear of the depression and how dark it might get. And I've been quite stable for some time and that's been amazing, but there's always an underlying fear that, you know, I could slip and have another episode that was scary. Do you ever have those kinds of feelings?
I understand that. But again, I've been good for quite a while as well. Even when bad things have happened, there's probably a difference between sadness and depression. For example, if something bad happens to you, then yeah, you should feel sad. You would be a sociopath if you didn't, like, if your best friend died, it is absolutely okay to feel sad about that, but then it's just if that grows into something else. I think I've been good with sort of coping with the stuff that life throws and not spiraling, basically. So yeah, but there is always something in the back of your mind, I guess. But I think, touch wood, touch everything, I think I'm getting better with coping with what life throws out. I mentioned positivity. So obviously positive thinking is fantastic and great and necessary, but I think toxic positivity can be really dangerous. If something bad has happened and you say, you know, you've just got to look at the positives, well, you know what? Sometimes bad things happen and it is okay to grieve and it is okay to be sad for a bit and it's okay to feel your emotions. Some things do not have a positive aspect about it. They are bad things that happened that didn't deserve to happen, and it is okay to grieve and go through your emotional process as long as it's not dangerous, as long as you can find happiness and mental equilibrium again. I don't know if that made any sense.
No, it totally does. And, you know, this idea of what they call situational depression, and it's even in the DSM, it's as a mental health condition. And I always thought of that just being sad for a period of time. If you're in depression for more than, I believe it's 12 months in and out of depression, that's considered situational depression. Well, maybe it's just trying to deal with grief or sadness over another life event. I think that for me, I have depression all the time. It's always there. If something happens to me that's very sad, yes, I totally, completely agree. Like, I should be sad, and being sad is different than a bipolar depressive episode. Like, having to see those distinctions is really important, because I think before I would get caught up in, oh, I'm feeling sad. Oh, this means I'm getting depressed. And you got it. You know, it's okay. And it's like you said, if you weren't sad, there'd be an issue, a different issue.
Yeah. I guess it's recognizing those, what's happening with you. Like, so there was a period a couple of years ago where I was exhausted all the time. And I thought, oh, I'm going through a depressive episode. I went to the doctor and I had diabetes. So that was, you know, just quit out the sugary snacks and my diabetes is now in remission and feel a lot better.
You said how you've been doing relatively well over the last while. What's made the change there? I mean, being really into the music and playing in the bands is, you know, creative outlets are huge. But other than that, what have you been doing to stay healthy?
The band stuff has helped. All I've ever wanted to do is to get signed, to make an album, to have a vinyl, and we're about to do all of those things. So that is just the fact that I can now say not everyone in the world gets to be able to do this. You know, other people have kids or a nice car. This is the thing that I wanted to get to do, and I'm getting to do it. So it has helped me massively. Although, like, it's really funny because a lot of people say that that's kind of not the, that's not the deal. Like, have you ever seen the movie Cool Runnings?
I don't know. Is it the bobsled one?
Yeah, the bobsled one.
Okay.
Yeah, the famous line in that is, if you're not enough without a gold medal, then you will never be enough with one. So the whole idea is, if you're not enough without a record deal, then you won't be enough with one. But that was the thing that I needed from my, like, I needed someone to say, I think you're great and I love your music and I want you to make a record. That was the thing that helped me for some reason. Brush it off. Dust is dead. Water stars. Eyelashes. We left to burn. I left behind. I don't know, as you grow older, I think you become more comfortable with yourself. There's life still, just like I own a house. I'm less lonely than I used to be as well. There are more people in the circle, I guess, to talk to. I think there's a massive epidemic of loneliness in society, I think. I think way more people are lonely and don't want to admit it or don't know how to get out of loneliness. I was certainly one of those people. If it wasn't for music, I would have like no friends. Or like I would have like two friends. It's the thing that I do. I go to gigs with people or I play music, and it's the thing to talk about, and it's the activity to do. You know, for people that don't have that, it can be really difficult to make friends. Yeah, so I think that's something that's helped me as well, just having more people in my life that I like. There was this Bill Burr quote that I heard that really tried to change my perspective on things. He said he tried being angry, he tried being sad, he tried pushing people away. So now, why not try just making the most of it? And it's like, okay,
yeah,
let's try and make the most of it.
Have you been able to do anything therapy-wise that has helped? You mentioned about having a therapist that wasn't the greatest for you, but are there other things that you do that would be things that help?
I tried PTSD therapy recently, and it didn't wash all that well. Like, he was lovely and stuff, but I didn't find it massively helpful. In fact, the most helpful thing I found recently is I did a stand-up comedy course, and that's been more helpful than like any therapy session I've ever had. It was amazing. Just again meeting people who like, because like I love punk music, but I also love stand up comedy. It's the thing I geek out on and like thing that I go to a lot. So just meeting like minded people that love that kind of thing, and it was also really funny. Like, laughing is one of the greatest antidepressants you will ever have. It really helps.
And sing too, and scream.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Screaming is literally, I think it's some kind of Buddhist meditation. I've seen people do it before. So like being able to scream in a microphone and like, yeah, or like sing really loudly in a microphone is a really powerful thing to be able to get to do. And as I say, I'm sure I saw some kind of meditation where he was just like yelling and like going mental. I was like, oh, I've seen a few punk rock singers.
Or the punk rock scene gives people permission to do that too.
Yeah.
Anybody can jump up there and scream, whether you're a fan in the crowd that wants to jump up and share the microphone, or whether you're starting a punk band and you don't really know to sing very well, so you just scream it out until you find some melody.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's therapeutic too. It's not, I always talk about, because the podcast is called Scream Therapy, I always talk about how to go into the woods and scream your lungs out to try to feel better. Sure, that could have some benefits, but to be in a punk band, you can go up there and scream about your emotions or about political situations. So now you're screaming for a reason. That can be very expressive and therapeutic.
Absolutely. There's a purpose behind it, which I think gives it more power. And there's several facets to that. You're screaming with a band, so you have a common purpose together. If you're the writer, then you're also writing those feelings down. I'm not a political writer sort of thing, but to have that feeling to not be listened to is so frustrating. To be able to just write that down is really important. And there's also the part of the audience in that. It's just like you are connecting, you are becoming part of something bigger because of the thing that you're creating. It's such a powerful thing.
Are you putting your mental health struggles into the songs lyrically?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's mainly what I write about. Well, I write about my mental health troubles and getting dumped. Those are the big
and the connection between the two things.
Yeah. Well, I write about love, mental health. Yeah, those two things, basically.
If you could say something to that teenager that was having so many mental health struggles, and also the person that tried to end their life, what would you say to them?
It's going to be, well, it's so funny, Vicky. I don't know if I would have believed me, but I would have said, it's going to be okay. Like, it is going to be okay. You can't see it now, but it's going to be fine. It's going to be good. It's not even going to be just, like, tolerable. Stuff's going to be good. You're going to be able to feel positive emotions again at some point. So you just need to hang in there. To my 14-year-old self, what will I say? Chill out. Please, just chill out. And you will get to do things that you dreamed about doing. You won't hit everything, but you will still do a lot of cool things that you will be very excited about. Yeah, it's going to be okay. Stop worrying about everything.
That was my conversation with Nick Wood of Tired of Fighting, tiredoffighting.co.uk. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
Yo, it's Eboshi.
Hey, this is Eboshi from Cartel Madras, and you're listening to CJSF.
I was on the back of your mind. I was on the back of your lap. You were in the back of the car. You were in the back of my heart. I was in the back of the bar. You know what I do, take things too far. Don't know where to start or begin. Don't know how it ends. Don't know how to say what I meant. Don't know how to say how I feel. Baby, is it real? I was like 34 double Ds. You know what I like? Ice cold.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Bernie B.C.
This is Birdnote. The critically endangered akohekohe, or crested honeycreeper, is one of Hawaii's most striking native songbirds. Akohekohe are endemic to the island of Maui, meaning they exist nowhere else on Earth. Slightly smaller than a robin, akohekohe are uniformly dark with silver flecks on their face and upper breast and patches of bright orange around their eyes and nape. They also sport a fancy little tuft of white feathers on their foreheads. Akohekohe primarily feed on nectar from the pom-pom-shaped flowers of the ohia tree. With their exceptionally long legs, they dash through the treetops, performing acrobatic twists and splits to poke their heads into the fiery red ohia blossoms. Along the way, their fluffy crests collect pollen like a feather duster, making akohekohe important forest pollinators. But habitat destruction, invasive mosquitoes, and avian malaria have endangered these special birds. Today, the only remaining akohekohe survive in a sliver of high-elevation forest on Maui's eastern slopes, where mosquitoes are more scarce, at least for now. As climate change intensifies existing threats to Hawaii's native birds, conservation organizations like the Maui Forest Bird Recovery Project are working hard to ensure that akohekohe have a future in their remote island home. For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.